Guys, this deals with the shepherds, and we dealt with this a little bit in the past about what happened with Yaakov when he first met Rachel and kissing her, and what that means and where that comes from. Now we're dealing with the pesukim that are right before that. He meets a bunch of shepherds. It says, "Vayomer heino oda yom gadol." So Yaakov turns to the shepherds and he says, "You know, the day is still great. The sun is still in the middle of the sky. Lo yisa seifa meknan. It's not time for you to turn in all the sheep. Hishkuatzon, hashkuatzon. Let the tzon drink. Let the sheep drink a lichuru and go graze them in the field. There's no reason for it to end right here. You guys are just lying down and being lazy about it." It says in pasachas vayomer lo nuchal. They said, "We can't. Adashay yasu kol adarim until all this flocks gather together. Everybody has to gather together. Vegalos evan me'al pi ha'er." And we can roll off the rock that's on top of the well, the Yishkinu Atzon, and we give a drink to the sheep itself. Now, it's clear that the point of these psukim is to say that the rock was really, really heavy, and it took a lot of people to overturn that rock. And that was the point of what we're saying over here, that we all had to get together and give them a drink, etc. I get that. That's the idea. But this literally comes in the middle of nowhere. This is in the middle of absolutely nowhere. He's having a great one-sided conversation with these guys. Do you guys know Lavan? Do you know what we're talking about? Do you know what's happening over here? He's trying to gauge who they are and Uncle Lavan and try to figure out who the city is. And then all of a sudden, he gives them Musser. He just gets up to them and says, "You know, I don't think you're doing your job right. I just want you to imagine this. Like a guy walking into your place of work and just saying that to you, that's ridiculous. Why in the world would these guys be okay with Yaakov Avinu coming up and telling them what to do? He should have turned around, slapped Yaakov Avinu in the face, and said, 'Who are you to start telling us what to do? Get out of here. We don't have to talk to you.' He should have ganged up on him and thrown him out completely. Now, I get the idea, but I just don't understand what Yaakov Avinu thought he was doing here and why Yaakov Avinu felt that he was their policeman, their mashgiach, to take care of everything that was going on with them. So Rashi says that Yaakov saw these shepherds lying down in the middle of the day as if they were ready to go home. And he asked them, "I don't get it. Why are you going home so early? If you're hired by the day, then the day isn't over yet. I just don't get what the minhagim of this town are. It looks like you guys are doing something really, really strange. What's going on here?" The Gur Aryeh and the Be'er Hetiv says, this is learned out from the wording in the Pasuk, "Hein ode yom gadol." If I look at the sky, it seems to me that the sun is in the middle of the sky. What am I missing here? And then right afterward, it says, "Lo eiseh seif mekneh." Unless the minig of the city is different, this is strange. This is not what you would do. Nobody stops their work in the middle of the day, and it seems like that's what you're doing. Why are you doing this? So that was his confusion. He just couldn't understand why this was happening. Miam Lois points out that we really have no idea what it means to be a Schir Yom. Now, again, granted, there's not too many people here who are ever going to have a job as a Schir Yom. But a Schir Yom is a person who's hired by the hour for that hour. Not more than that. You are hired by the hour, meaning you're getting paid by the hour. No salary, no anything like that. Absolutely for the hour itself. You think that if you're hired as a worker, then you get to do whatever you want. You want to take a bathroom break? Go take a bathroom break. You want to go get a drink? Go get a drink. You want to go eat something? Go eat something. We think that it's just easy. You can do whatever you want. It's not true. That's not true. A Schir Yom has to get permission from his boss for everything. There's no way to just go home early or just because you're sick to be able to take off your time. You are a slave to your master. That's the way it is when it comes to a person who's a Schir Yom itself. Normally, maybe a person could work from one step from sunrise until whatever. These people work from sunrise until sunset. They couldn't take real breaks. They had a lunch break that was exactly as it was supposed to be, and that's that. They gathered by the well. They were waiting for everyone. Yaakov Avinu couldn't understand. "You guys are Schir Yom. This doesn't make any sense to me. What's going on here?" That's the reason why he was so confused. He said, this seems like a really strange minute. Why was the well covered? Why was this well covered more than anything else? So the Torah Shlema says it could be that they were trying not to steal from one another. But that's weird. You know why that's weird? Because then what does Yaakov Avinu do once Rachel Imenu comes? What does Yaakov do? He rolls the stone off the well by himself. Why was that allowed? They put the rock on top of the well so that they wouldn't steal from each other and nobody would be able to roll it off without the other. And then Yaakov Avinu sees Rachel coming and he immediately can roll off the rock from the well. I understand. He's like, "Oh, he's so strong. Oh, he found her such a beautiful woman." So I get that. Fine. There's something there to say. But why isn't that stealing? If the point was so they don't steal from each other, then Yaakov Avinu was literally stealing in front of all of them. Because all of the flocks apparently weren't there. They were waiting, unless they were all waiting for Rachel, and they were all waiting for Rachel Imenu to come along. But it seems very strange that that's the reason why he did it. So it must be with something else. Maybe it happened to be there was a huge rock that happened just at that moment. Meaning normally the well was open. Just today, and I know that sounds strange, but just on this day. A huge rock came, covered up the well, and all the people, all the flocks were saying, we don't know what to do. Maybe it happened the day before. Maybe it had happened one time before that. Maybe the well was right by a mountain. So they said, at these times, we have to wait for everybody to come around in order to feed. I guess they said, lo nuchal ad sheryasvu kol ha'adarim. We think that means every day we rolled off the rock together. Maybe it was just today. Just today, we can't roll off the rock. We need more people to come. We've been waiting for more people to come. As soon as Yaakov showed, oh, I can get rid of it. So it wasn't a problem with theft. It was just a problem of, simply put, they couldn't get through it. Maybe that was the idea behind it. And maybe there was a minhag involved with this. Maybe the minhag was that you waited until a certain time when everybody would gather together, but it wasn't considered stealing. Maybe they had a minhag to cover up the well, maybe to keep impurities out of it. That would be a smart thing to do, right? So they wanted to keep impurities out of the well, so maybe that's the reason why they covered it up. It's just strange. This Torah Shlomo is pointing it out. I'm trying to destroy your childhood little by little. And I know in your childhood, you probably learned that they were stealing from each other, and that's why they put the rock on top of the well. I just don't understand that. Then Yaakov Avinu should not have taken the rock off the well. That seemingly should have been usher. I can't understand why there would be mutter. The Sforno points out that obviously Yaakov Avinu should not have gotten involved here. These are the workers' deal with their boss. This has nothing to do with Yaakov Avinu, but a tzaddik cannot handle it when he sees something wrong. When a tzaddik sees somebody doing something wrong, then he has to say something. He said, I don't want to say anything to you, but this is strange. This doesn't make any sense to me. Tzaddikim do that. The Moshe of Zakenim learns from here, if you see something improper, then you have to say something. It doesn't mean you have to go beat him up. He didn't try beating up the shepherds. He said to them, I don't get it, guys. Why are you doing this? This doesn't make any sense. He went up to them. Now, there are clearly limitations to this, but the idea is the same, that if you see something improper, you should say something. Always try saying something to someone because it doesn't make any sense otherwise. The Be'er Mayim Chaim says that the shepherds didn't say much to Yaakov. And he goes the exact opposite route. That these guys, he suspected them of being schirei yom, that they were being lazy on their job. The Be'er Mayim Chaim says the reason why they didn't say anything is because that's the halacha. You can't even answer someone back when you're in the middle of the work if you're a schir yom. Meaning, I'm giving an example. I'm not sure exactly this would be that. But if you have a cleaning lady that's working for you by the hour, that person is probably a schir yom. Probably is working a schir yom. Meaning, they're working for an hour of the time, meaning I guess you hire them from 9 to 1 o'clock in the afternoon, 9 a.m. to 1 o'clock in the afternoon. They can't make up the time later. Again, if they can make up time later, that might not be a schir yom. But they have to work for you from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. If that's the deal, right, then there's no way to make it up later on. The halacha is they're not even allowed to waste time to talk to other people. If they get a phone call, they can't answer it. They can't answer it. Even if they have a little headset, a little Bluetooth, in which they're answering the phone while they're still doing their work and doing whatever they need to do, a schir yom, in theory, is not allowed to answer. And they did that. So when they said, do you know Lavan? He said, yes. Is everything okay with them? Peace. Oh, here's Rachel. That's what they could say, but nothing more than that. They mamish weren't allowed to say anything whatsoever. So that's when Yaakov Avinu turned to them and said, I don't understand, you guys seem like the greatest workers ever. You wouldn't even have a conversation with me when I was asking you questions because you didn't want to take away time from your work. But now you're sitting and lying down and doing nothing? That doesn't make any sense. He saw the hypocrisy that was there within them. That's what he had a problem with. And he said, I don't get it. If you're such good workers, then why are you going to do this over here? And they answered, normally we would never do this. We don't have a choice. There's a rock on top of the wall. We can't get rid of it. There's nothing I can do. Sfas HaMes asked the obvious question. Always go to the Sfas HaMes for an obvious question. Sfas HaMes asked, look, did Yaakov not see the rock on top of the well? Did he not see it? The well was right there. There's a rock on top of it. He said to them, just give a drink to your... Did you not see how big that stone is? Do you not see how huge the stone is? It's clear they couldn't roll it off. Why in the world did Yaakov Avinu ask them, what are you guys doing here? They had to point out that there was a rock on top of the well? Such an obvious question. So he answers, no. Yaakov Avinu was such a tzaddik and so used to having miracles happen to him, being in Yeshiva Shemir for 14 years, he did not realize what was going on here. He looked at it and he saw there was a rock on top of the well, but he had no idea what it meant. And he figured, if they need it, they need it. Yaakov Avinu never had this problem of, there's something in my way, there's an impediment in my way, so therefore I can't go learn Torah today. That was not like him. I'm just giving an example now that I'm pointing out anybody here. If he felt sick, if he had a stomachache or a headache, there was never an impediment to him learning Torah. That didn't mean like, oh, forget it, I'm not going to learn Torah today. If he had a headache, he learned with a headache. If he had a stomachache, he learned with a stomachache. There was no problem holding him back, taking him back and saying, oh, well, I can't learn now because of X, Y, and Z. No, he did it anyway. And in this line, this tzaddik, Yaakovinu, looked at this well, saw the rock on top of the well, and said, just take the rock off. Oh, it's too heavy? If you need it, why wouldn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu let you just take it off like that? If you need it, Hashem will help you. That's the concept of what it is over here. The remez is that Yaakovinu had gotten rid of his Yetzer Hara so completely. There was literally nothing holding him back from doing good. That's not what he was. He was always working hard. Maybe that's how you can understand, again, we talked about this before, how Yaakovinu was able to kiss Rachel. We think of it as like a strong man, like, you know, just taking the rock off the well and giving a kiss to the little girl, right? I mean, remember, he was 77 and she was 5. So that's a little strange to begin with. But the idea behind it is something a little bit better. He felt something different. This is not a taiva. Yaakovinu's beyond taiva. He's beyond those types of issues. That's not something he has a problem with. He can't understand how there's a rock on top of the well and that's an impediment. So just take it off. This is a different type of person. And therefore, kissing Rachel was a different type of kiss. It's not like that. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, one of the two famous Talmidim of the Chavetz Chaim. Does anybody know who the other famous Talmid of the Chavetz Chaim was? It was Rabbi Chanan Wasserman and... Come on, somebody here has to know it. He's known after the yeshiva that he started. The what? Oh, nothing? It's not brisk. Go for it. You're not saying it loud enough. Chavetz Chaim. No. Not that. Not because of the Chavetz Chaim. Panovich. The Panovich Rav. Yosef Kahaneman. Right? Rav Kahaneman was the next one. They were the two big Talmidim of the Chavetz Chaim. So Rav Chanan Wasserman, it was awesome seeing Rav Chanan Wasserman in the street with the Chavetz Chaim. I wish I could have been there. Chavetz Chaim was a very, very small guy. I don't know how tall he was. They say he was in his fours and 4 feet, 4 foot, whatever. Right? Rav Chanan Wasserman was about 6'2", 6'3". And he would bend over all the way when he was walking with the Chavetz Chaim to hear everything his Rebbe would say. So Rav Chanan Wasserman asked this question to the Chavetz Chaim. And he said, how did Yaakovinu get up and give this mussar over to people that he didn't know? And the Chavetz Chaim answered, he used the magic word. He used the word that helped the shepherds understand that he meant it for their own, only for their good, not for himself. He didn't want to yell at them, but he used something good. He started off the conversation, not in this puzzle, but he started off the conversation by saying, Achai. My brothers, you don't go up to somebody you don't know and give them mussar immediately. Obviously, you never go up to somebody and just yell at them and say, what are you doing? Why are you not? You don't do that. At first, you start off and you say, I'm your friend. How are you doing? Where are you from? You from this city? Let's play a little Jewish geography. You know my Uncle Lavan? Yeah, is he a good guy? Everything's all good? Okay, anyway, you guys are totally wrong. That's the way you do it. If you want to give mussar, you first have to show the word achai. There has to be something there first. They have to have something there. Otherwise, you can't do it. Chavetz Chaim is a story with this. It is the greatest story. Such an awesome story. Chavetz Chaim was traveling from city to city. He was selling the Mishnah Berurah, selling his sets of Mishnah Berurah and paying back his debts that he incurred and printing up the Mishnah Berurah, whatever it was. But he's going from city to city selling this farm. He arrived at an inn, sat down at a table to eat dinner, right? A good inn, Jewish inn, everything like that. And all of a sudden, this guy walked in, huge. Absolutely huge guy. Clearly, like, did not look Jewish whatsoever. Didn't look like he was a Jewish guy. But he came in with all the everything in there. Sat down at a table. Demanded food. They brought him food. They brought him whiskey. Started drinking immediately before he ate anything. Started getting really drunk. Ate his food without making any brachas whatsoever. Started singing. And started saying these words that obviously should not be said in front of a person like the Chafetz Chaim or anybody, in fact. That shouldn't be done at all. And he started going crazy, at the table itself. The Chafetz Chaim was about to go up to him. Start speaking to him, and the innkeeper saw what was happening, ran over to the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim was famous, not as famous yet, but he still knew this is a big rav, and said, don't say anything to him. This guy is one of them, pardon me if I don't pronounce this correctly, but Cantonists. The Cantonists were unfortunately children who were taken from their homes by the Russian army at the age of 7, 8 years old. They would grab these kids and inscript them into the Russian army for 25 years. They couldn't leave. They couldn't see their parents. Normally, these kids, none of them could remain from. It's impossible. They're a 7 or 8-year-old kid. That's your age, buddy. For your age, right? You think I know my son's age? Not your age. Close. And he would take them out, right, and do everything that I guess you would do with such a kid, make sure they were Machalal Shabbos, not feed them kosher food, make them forget everything they had learned under their parents and their teachers and everything. And as they're going through, as everything is going on, 25 years passes. some of these kids somehow kept a little bit of their connection to Judaism, they would go home, and normally they would find their parents were dead. And they had no one to go home to, and they were done. Barely any of these kids ever remained Jewish, ever remained anything, I should say they didn't remain Jewish, remained observant, and they weren't able to do anything. They weren't able to do anything whatsoever. So he came into this. He said he's a Cantonist. You know, he doesn't know any better. And if you anger him, if you get him angry, he could kill you. And he's a Russian army guy. There's nothing you're going to be able to do. If he kills you, nothing's going to happen. So Chofetz Chaim understood. He approached the man anyway. He went up to him and he said, Shalom Aleichem, with a big smile. Chofetz Chaim approached him with a big smile. Then he continued, did I hear correct that you're one of the Cantonists? You were stolen from your parents when you were 7 or 8 years old. You were made to work in the army since then. You were raised by terrible people. I can't imagine what you went through. You probably went through Gehenna on earth. All the worst thing that I could possibly imagine, you went through earth. Worse. I can't imagine what you've seen. I can't imagine what they've made you do. You probably were forced to eat terrible things. You probably were never able to do what you wanted to do. And yet you still remain Jewish. You come into a town and you stay at the Jewish inn, not at the non-Jewish inn. You don't go with your friends that are eating at non-Jewish places, eating the non-Jewish stuff. You're sitting in a kosher establishment, and you're eating kosher food. He said, I envy your spot in the world to come. And I honestly, when I read the story, I don't think the Chofetz Chaim was saying that just to be. I honestly feel this is what the Chofetz Chaim was saying to him. I envy your spot in the Olam Haba. I envy it. I can't believe, I wish I had your schuyas, your mesiris nefesh, to eat kosher food when you had everything like that. Your nisayan was more difficult than that of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, being thrown into the Kivshan Aish. I can't imagine what you went through. The man began to cry. His neshama felt it. His neshama felt that the Chofetz Chaim meant it. That's the important point. And that he really felt that he was looking out for his own good. He looked at this 4'10" man, right? He looked at him and began to kiss the hem of his cloak. He started to cry. Chofetz Chaim told him, I can't imagine how envious everyone in Olam Haba would be of you if you started becoming observant again. I can't imagine the schus that would be if you'd add on to your skuyos, right? I don't even know if I would be able to be in your spot if you would do something like that. The man agreed. The man agreed. Crying to the Chofetz Chaim, he said, I'm going to try very hard. I don't know what I can do, but I'll try very hard to be able to do whatever I can. They say that he stayed with the Chofetz Chaim the whole time. He became a Baal Tshuva, and that man was my father. Nah, it's just, it sounds better that way, right? I can't really say that. Yeah, that man became Rav Yashiv and the Stipler and Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach all together in one. I have no idea. But regardless, the story is an unbelievable story. It tells you that's what the Chofetz Chaim really meant it. He mamish meant it. He meant this person is like this, and that's how you're supposed to give it. Not always are we zocheh to do it. Listen, sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't happen. But when a person does that, the effect is obviously so much better. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky talks about this as well. And Emes Liakov, he brings it up as well. The Kliyakar says, he purposely asked them, he went up to these shepherds, and he asked them, only when Rachel was coming. If you notice in the Psukim, and I didn't write all the Psukim down over here. First they said, yeah, we know Lavan. Yeah, we've heard of him. And look, Rachel Imenu is coming. Rachel was already on the way there. Then he says to them, at that point he looks at them, and he says to them, he says, okay, tell me, why are you guys sitting down? He only gives the muster once he sees Rachel Imenu coming. And then afterward, Rachel Imenu comes. Why are we interrupting? Why not say this before Rachel Imenu came? What happened over here? So the Kliyakar says, this is a girl that he knew he may end up marrying. He heard about this. He knew about the young daughter of Lavan. And he knew it's possible this is going to be his future wife. So he had to test it. He wanted to test it. He said he wants to know, why are these people hanging around and this girl, my future wife, is possibly coming out to hang out with them. So he wanted to find out, is this what you guys usually do? You guys usually hang out by the well waiting for the girls to come, and then you hang out with the girls while you're sitting waiting by the well? Is my future wife a person that hangs out with a bunch of guys at a well? Is that what he does? Is that what she does? He wanted to find out exactly what it was. When he heard from them, no, we're good people. We're only waiting for the thing to come, right? And that's it's only for the rock to be rolled off and that's it. Then he understood. Rachel Aminu was still a tzadekes. There was nothing for him to worry about. But he specifically asked it because he wasn't sure. The Chizkuni says that it was another reason. He wanted a private conversation with Rachel Aminu. He wanted to hear, not for issues of Yichud, I would assume it's still out in the field, but he wanted to have a private conversation with her, and he knew he wouldn't be able to have it if these shepherds were there. So he tried chasing them off. He tried saying, guys, go back to work. Go back to work. Rachel Imenu is coming right now. Go back to work. I'll see you guys soon. You know, I want to find out everything. That's the idea behind it. He wanted to find out. The Netziv says this is from the Medrash Rabbah as well. That was obvious. He just said, I need some time to be able to speak to Rachel, and that was that. Tosefes Bracha says, it is strange that he wanted to speak to Rachel in front of them. He says, that must be the same reason why Yosef wanted to reveal himself to the brothers with nobody around. Just like Yosef HaTzadik said to all the Mitzrayim around, get out, so he can reveal himself to the brothers. Yaakovinu wanted to do the same thing with Rachel so that she knew who he was, where he came from, and it wouldn't be embarrassing for her. Rav Schwab says something different. He knew his strength. He knew his power, and that he was going to be able to take the rock off by himself. Rav Schwab says he didn't want anyone else to see it. He knew what he had. He knew what he was about to do. So he said to the shepherds, guys, why don't you turn around that way? Knowing that he was going to give some water over to Rachel, so he said, go the other way, so that they don't have to see it. The shepherds remained, and therefore Zocha to see a tremendous miracle, the likes of which nobody had ever seen. There's a lesson here. Even if a Rebbe tries chasing you away, especially if it's a Gadol B'Yisrael, even if a Rebbe says, nah, just go. Pushing yourself in may very well be worth it. You never know what you're going to hear, what you're going to see. You never know what you're going to be able to do. There's always a point. The Rebbe is there to be able to teach. And sometimes, even if he kicks you out because he doesn't want you to see something that he's doing or know something he's doing, you can still learn lessons from that. There's still Torah in that, I guess you could say, that meeting, that pegisha that you have together with that person. And therefore, for that reason, says Rav Schwab, they had a tremendous chus. They saw a huge miracle happen in front of their eyes. They watched the rock being rolled off right in front of them. That's an amazing, amazing chus. But the Chassam Sofer says the exact opposite. There was an issue of Yichud. There was a massive issue of Yichud. He didn't want them to leave. So he wanted to gauge how long they'd be there for, so that he knew if he could wait for Rachel or not. If they were going to get up and go, then he wasn't going to be able to wait with Rachel. He was afraid of Yichud. So therefore he said, how long are you guys going to be here for? When they said, we'll be here for a little bit, then he stayed with them and he talked to Rachel Imenu. The exact opposite of what we just said from the Chizkuni. Literally the exact opposite. Rabbi Ephraim also says something over here. Regardless, the Or HaChaim HaKadosh says, the reason why he said something is because of Tzar Balei Chaim D'Oraisa. You can't let your sheep become thirsty like this. This is an actual isser from the Torah. You can't allow yourselves to watch animals suffer. How could you let these animals suffer in front of you? If these sheep were normally used to getting drinks at this time, then that's Tzar Balei Chaim. And I'm sure everybody knows this. If animals are used to eating at a certain time, then there's a pain by those animals if they don't eat at that time. And that's the reason why you're supposed to feed animals before you, possibly even drinking before you. That's machlokas. But there is the idea of what you're supposed to do. So he also suggests maybe he was wondering how far away the town was. These animals are clearly barnyard animals. They're in barns at night. And they're during the day, they're grazing out in the fields. So he wanted to know how far away is the town that you're sitting there, you're letting them graze and drink during the day. And how much further is it to the town? If you're waiting here, then clearly it's a while to get to town. You want to know how far away it was exactly. But I think the most obvious answer for all of this is like the most obvious answer that I'm sure occurred to everybody here. Yaakov Avinu was planning on being a shepherd. That's what he wanted to do. He probably wanted to know the minhagim of the town, what they did as shepherds, and how they went about their business. I would assume, and the most obvious thing in the world, he was asking them not to give them mussar. Meaning, up until now, we're saying that he was yelling at them, he's telling them, what are you doing? And he was saying that they were doing something silly. I'm going to say the exact opposite. He was doing it, simply put, because he knew he's going to be a shepherd. What are the minhagim here? Is this what we do? We all stay by the well? We wait for the water? What do we do exactly? I would assume that that's the reason why he had waited and he said something over here. The Malaya Omer, Avnei Shoam, and Rabbi Yonis and Eibshitz all say the exact same answer, and it's a good one. Anybody remember what happened the day before? Where was Yaakov the night before, I should say? The night before, he was in Haran Moriah, right? What happened? Yaakov traveled all the way to Haran, came to Haran, and realized, I passed by Haran Moriah, the area where the Akedah happened, where my Avos davened. I passed by that area and I didn't daven. How could I have not davened there? So he turned around and started to go back. And we all know what happened, right? What happened at that moment? Kfitza Derech. The land folded up. So instead, he was here, right? Haran Moriah was here. The land folded up and just became like that, right? And he had Kfitza Derech, found himself right there in Haran Moriah. And then what happened? Found himself right there and the sun set 2 hours early. The sun was supposed to set 2 hours later. It set 2 hours earlier so that Yaakov wouldn't leave. Hashem wanted him sleeping there that night. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu made sure that he would sleep there that night by making the sun set early. Now, guys, when we hear something like that, what we tend to forget is the rest of the world when something like that happens. So we have a halacha from there. What do we learn from that halacha? From Yaakov Inu sitting in that spot, and then all of a sudden the sun's setting, we learn a halacha. What halacha is there? Maariv. We learn the halachas of Maariv from Yaakov Inu, that you're allowed to daven Maariv a little bit early. Because Yaakov meant to daven earlier, and then the sun sets. There's a tosis on this in Brachos, right? On Kav Vav, also on Beis. This idea of Maariv was created by Yaakov Inu, right? Because he got there, it set early, whatever. But what happened to the rest of the world? The rest of the world were sitting out there, chilling out at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and then all of a sudden the sun set. All of a sudden they looked up and it's dark outside. And everybody looked around, they're just like, what in the world just happened? How did that happen? So there were shepherds with their sheep in the fields. And these shepherds had no idea what had just happened. Now all of a sudden they're in the fields and it's dark outside. What's dangerous when it's dark outside? There are wolves out there. There are lions out there back in the day. Right? There are animals. There are robbers out there. These shepherds were scared out of their minds. They didn't know what to do. They quickly herded in their sheep, got all their sheep back, right, and brought them back to town. The next day is when Yaakov Inu finds these shepherds, and the shepherds stopped early. Why did they stop early? Why were they sitting by the well early? Said Yaakov Inu, it seems like they're doing it because they're afraid of it happening again. See, Yaakov Inu went up to them and said, guys, that's never going to happen again. It happened once. I can tell you right now, when the sun set early yesterday, that'll never happen ever again. So the Mulei Omer, the Tiferet Sonos, and Avnei Shoham said that the reason why he went up to them, again, it wasn't to give them Musar. It wasn't to give them Musar. It was to explain to them, I know why you're doing this. You're doing this because you think the sun is going to set early. Don't worry, it's not going to happen again. That won't happen. And the truth, the shepherd said, that's not why we're doing it. That's not why we're doing this. The reason why we're doing this is because we know that it's going to happen at the right time, whatever, and that's fine. But the rock on top of the well, we can't get rid of it without everybody there. So we would have done this even without them. There are ramazim in these psukim, and I'm not going to be able to go through all of them. There are amazing ramazim. The tzapnas paneach. Tzapnas paneach brings down these flocks of sheep refer to what's going to be in Yemosa Mashiach. The three flocks of sheep are the three generations that lead up to the times of Mashiach. And when Mashiach comes, everything will be clear. The rock, which is unclarity, that's not a word, is it? But unclarity. Something unclear is the rock on top of the well, will be rolled off and everything will be made clearer. In the days of Mashiach, everything will be able to be fine. You'll sit there, you'll learn, you'll understand. Ah, now it makes sense. But people like Yaakov Inu can do this on their own. They don't need everyone getting together a Mashiach to come in order to understand, have a clarity in Torah. Yaakov Inu and people like Rabbi Akiva are able to take the rock off the well and understand Torah to its fullest, to the 50th level of understanding without all this. They don't need this to understand Torah. That's the concept of what they have. The Yalkut Teiman, which is brought by the Sefer, what's it called, Torah Shlema of Rav Menachem Kasher, says the exact same thing. That there's such a concept that it was so great, right? Such a great understanding that this whole thing had to do with understanding Torah. And really, the Medrash HaGadol, the Hadar Zakenim, which is a Baal Tosvos, as well as the Alshin, all say that this is referring to learning Torah in some way, shape, or form, that the water of the well is the waters of, or are the waters of the Torah. Is it is? I think it is the waters of the Torah itself. And that the idea of if you can bring the well water out, you can bring Mashiach on your own. That's the concept of what it was. So they thought that the people, the shepherds said, they said, look, Rachel's coming. The concept is that they think Rachel Imenu's cries, our tzchus avos, will be enough to bring Mashiach. And Yaakov Inu showed them, no, you can't rely on other people. You have to do something yourself. So to speak, build your own bricks. Allow the Beis HaMikdash to be built through you and don't rely on other people. That's the concept that we need over here, that Yaakov Inu was taking the rock off the well. You can't say that other people will do it. You can do it yourself, and everybody has something to do to make this happen. That's the concept of what it is. That's the way Amei Aratzim are. Amei Aratzim, these shepherds said, we'll wait until the Evan is gone, the Yetzer Hara is gone, but you can't do such a thing. That's not going to be. The Rabbeinu Ephraim says it's mamish a machlokis about how Mashiach came. I don't want to go into it, but the Rabbeinu Ephraim is just an awesome thing. And then the Reb Naftolemy Rupshitz says a famous answer with the word hain. But I'm going to end with Reb Meir of Parmeshalan and the Chidush Harim, two Chassidish Avorts. Reb Meir of Parmeshalan, when he came to this pasuk, when he came to this very pasuk, he lifted his hands out to the heavens, lifted his hands up to Shemayim, and he called out, Ribono Shel, if our many sins have caused us not to be able to gather the flocks together, if we can't be Osef, the Adarim, bringing all the flocks together and bring the Gula, then at least feed the sheep and give them what they need for them to survive. Look at the pasuk. He says, if the idea is, Hain Odayom Gadol, if it's not yet time yet, Hashem, to bring the Gula, if it's not yet time, Lo Eisei Asefa Mikneh, you can't bring in Klal Yisrael. It's not the time to bring all of Klal Yisrael in. If it's not yet time, Mashiach can't come yet, fine. Then Hishkuatzon Lechuru'u. Allow the sheep, B'nai Yisrael, to have all the parnasa they need up until that point. You don't want them to have Mashiach. You don't want them to have a Gula. Make sure they get parnasa. Make sure they get enough parnasa. That's Reb Meir of Parmeshalan begged HaKadosh Baruch Hu based on the wording of the pasuk itself. Amazing. Amazing. It's almost like this became a tefillah that we can use right now. The Chiddush HaRim says the same thing as well. He says the reason we have parnasa and hatzlacha in Golus is because of Yaakov Avinu. Because Yaakov Avinu davened for us when he was in Golus, and this was part of his prayers. That until Mashiach comes, we should not allow anything to be taken for granted. That everything we get, we should say thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and thank you to Yaakov Avinu for davening for us, for allowing this to be. And look at us. We're wealthier than our ancestors. We're wealthier than probably our last 12 generations of ancestors combined, if I had to guess, all together. It's something that we should be saying modim for every single day. It shows us how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us, that even when we sit there and things go wrong and bad things happen, we are truly loved by HaKadosh Baruch Hu because of the amount that we have and what we could have more of. It's amazing what we have. Says the Chiddush HaRim, Reb Meir Parmeshalan, this pasuk tells us how much Yaakov Avinu cared for us and how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of his own sheep. That's the remez, the hint behind the pasuk itself. So what we did today was, we talked about why Yaakov Avinu felt he had to give muster to these shepherds. We gave over Rashi's and the Sforno's explanation with the Moshe of Zakenim as well. We pointed out the Be'er Mayim Chaim, the Spas Emes' famous Kasha, Rebbe Chanu Wasserman and what the Chofetz Chaim said back. We went the other way around. Maybe there's another answer with the Chizkuni versus the Chassam Sofer and the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. We spoke out the Malia Omer, the Avnei Shoam and the Tiferes Yehonasan, speaking about the times of what they were afraid of, these things themselves, and then the Ramazan, from the Tzopnas Paneach, the Alshech, the Medrash Gadol, the Rabbeinu Ephraim, and finally ending with this Tfilah. Okay, guys, we'll have a great Shabbos.